Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Sheriff Candidates Forum. This is presented to you by the Latino Outreach Council in concert with the League of Women Voters. We're honored to be able to do this as a community benefit for the voting folk out there and make sure that everybody is able to make an informed decision. My name is Jacqueline Frederick, and I am the president of Latino Outreach Council. Latino Outreach Council is a nonprofit, nonpolitical, nonpartisan organization that seeks to reach out to the Latino community and encourage them to become involved in our community, be available, know the available resources that we have in this county for that apply to all of our citizens, and also to provide educational forums. We do consider civic involvement to be an important part of outreach to the Latino community, so we do offer Spanish translation. If there is anyone here that needs Spanish translation, if you could just go back and speak to one of the Latino Outreach Council representatives, we'll be happy to accommodate that. And we do that at all of our forums. We have a number of forums that are set up this candidate season, so let me tell you about that right now. We will be holding a candidates forum for the judicial candidates. There are four judicial candidates this year, and that will be on April 25 here in the County Government Center Board of Supervisors hearing room, also at 5:30. We will be holding the district attorney forum on May 9, also here at 5:30. The second district forum for second district supervisor will be held on April 20 in Morro Bay, location to be announced. And we are still coordinating the fourth district supervisor candidates forum, which will be either at the end of this month or in early May. So we've got a lot on our plate. And I'd also like to announce that Latino Outreach Council is co-hosting Flavors of Slow with United Way, which is one of our outstanding organizations in our community that does so much. And that's going to be on May 5 at Mission Plaza. So lots going on. Let me tell you a little bit about the format for tonight. And this is the format that is used by Latino Outreach Council and the League of Women Voters at all of our candidates' forums. The questions that will be asked of the candidates have been submitted by the public. That's you. Many of you have submitted questions on these little 3x5 cards to the League of Women Voters, and also we receive some through our email address. They are being sorted through to avoid duplication and to make sure that there is a broad spectrum of questions that are being asked. This is something that the League of Women Voters is well known for. This is what they stand for. We have three wonderful volunteers this evening who are going to actually read the questions. I want to emphasize that the questions that they will be posing are being read to them. They are your questions, not their questions. But we ask them to do that for us as a part of the community service. So at this point, I'd like to introduce you to them. To my far right is Rick London. Rick is the CEO of United Way. He has been the CEO there for many years and involved for 18 years with United Way, wonderful organization, 35 years a resident in this county. We thank you, Rick, for being here and volunteering your time this evening. Thank you. We also have Angelica Fortini. Angelica is the city librarian for the city of Paso Robles. She is from San Diego, and the city of Paso Robles is very lucky that 2 years ago she made the decision to move up here and be a librarian. She is very experienced, 13 years experience as a librarian with a master's degree in library and information science, and she has volunteered this evening because she believes that civic discourse is an important part of our democracy. Thank you for volunteering today. And our next panelist is Mark Carella. Mark Carella is a vice president of Wells Fargo Bank. He has been a very involved community member, and I'm delighted that Mark is also a board member of Latino Outreach Council. It does a lot for this community, and we thank you, Mark, for volunteering this evening. The way this evening's going to go is each of the candidates have been invited to make a 3-minute opening remark. There was a coin toss, and so we know the order in which it's going to go, and I believe that Mr. Parkinson will be going first, and then that will be followed by a 3-minute opening by Mr. Clayton. We will then have questions. The questions will be posed by the panelists, and each candidate will have 1 minute in which to provide a response. Each candidate will respond to the same question. There will be no rebuttal. Vera of the League of Women Voters is down there, and she will be the timer, and so the candidates know to pay attention to all her very fancy signs. All right, and while we're on the topic of signs, I want to remind everyone that Latino Outreach Council does this as a community benefit. We feel very strongly that an informed voter is a good voter. Candidates deserve the opportunity to be heard. I know that there are some very volatile issues with regard to this particular race. I understand that. But I want to ask each of you to please provide the candidates with the opportunity to say what they want to say fully. That means no interruptions. That means no commentary or reaction. I notice that some people have signs in the audience. I think that will be disruptive. This is televised. And I think it's for the benefit of both candidates that the audience behaves themselves. So, also, the League of Women Voters follows what is the civil discourse in the public arena. And so they feel very strongly, as you know, about civil discourse. So I would appreciate it if you'd all cooperate in that manner. And please remember that if it gets a little stuffy or hot in here, we have a very full room. You can watch out in the lobby in the comfort of those nice chairs on the television screen. Okay, so without further ado, I would like to invite the candidates to begin, and we will begin with Mr. Parkinson with his 3-minute opening statement. Thank you.
Okay, I'm assuming that we cannot sit outside in the cool
breeze. Right. Sorry.
Well, first I'd like to say thank you to the Latino Outreach and the League of Women Voters for hosting tonight. I think it's important. And then certainly the panel that are volunteering their time to be here and ask questions, I appreciate it, and I'm sure my opponent appreciates it as well. This is by way of explanation. So first I'll say that this is a very important topic. It's a very important race. That's why I think we've crowded the room here. I want to just mention a few things about myself first. So I've been in law enforcement in this county for 34 years. I started at the age of 19 in Morro Bay, moved to San Luis City, where I rose to the rank of captain. And then sometime in 2009, I decided that I wanted to run for office for the sheriff's office. I felt that there was a need for some change. I felt that the things that needed to be changed, I had a tremendous amount of experience in. It's a very big job, but I felt that I was up for the task. So I entered the race and won the race and took office in 2011. You know, when I got elected, there was a number of things you say during your campaign that you want to accomplish. And for me, I had listed a laundry list of probably 10 to 12 things that I felt that were really important that I dealt with. So as soon as I entered office, I took immediate action. And within the first week, I had already started the hiring process for a retired LAPD commander for an internal affairs unit. And we started a number of different projects all at the beginning of the campaign or at the beginning of taking office. And what I found was is I was in a lot of ways overwhelming staff because there were so many changes that I wanted to make. But I really felt strongly that I needed to make positive change as soon as possible. During that first year, we accomplished nearly every single one of those campaign promises and goals, and I was very proud of that, but we didn't stop there. We've continued throughout the entire period that I've been in office now, over 7 years, making change. I've kept every single one of my promises. I can tell you, as difficult as some of the topics that we have going on, as difficult it is in our community, I'm focused on the positive, and I will remain focused on the positive and positive changes. And I feel that experience is extremely important at this point, and I feel that I have the ability and I have the track record to step up and make the change that is needed over the next 4 years. So thank you for being here. Thank you for taking the time to be informed. I look forward to the questions, and I will pass it from there before I get stopped.
Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Jackie, and thank you to the Latino Council, and thank you to Sheriff Parkinson and to our questionnaire folks tonight, and for everybody that showed up here tonight. This is a very derisive, contentious situation that we find ourselves in. I've never run for political office before. I'm 60 years old. I decided if there was one time in life you have to stand up, I was going to stand up now and carry this narrative through to Election Day. And this is a difficult process. It's been difficult on my family, my business, and my granddaughters are complaining they're not getting any papaw time. So, my name is Greg Clayton, and I'm running for the office of Sheriff Corner. I've resided in this county since 1975. I'm married with 3 children and 4 grandchildren, and my wife of 39 years is sitting right here, Charlene. Thank you for being here. I have a degree from Cal Poly in political science with a minor in public administration. I worked as a reserve deputy sheriff at the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department in the jail, dispatch, and the field from 78 to 79. I was employed at the San Luis Obispo Police Department from 79 to 92. I worked in patrol, SWAT, motorcycle traffic enforcement, and detectives. For the past 25 years, I've worked as a private investigator for the San Luis Obispo County Council, Santa Barbara County, Ventura County, municipal agencies from Monterey to Ventura, insurance companies, and private attorneys. I have worked both civil and criminal matters. I decided to enter this election after watching a torture video of the death of Andrew Holland in our county jail. I researched the use of restraint chairs in custody facilities and found dozens of inmate deaths nationwide in the past 18 years. In addition to the pain and suffering experienced by the inmates and the loss of a loved ones for the families, these deaths resulted in large monetary jury awards or settlements. Andrew Holland's death resulted in the loss of a much-loved son and brother. A $5 million settlement was paid by the county before a lawsuit was filed. A massive admission of guilt for the death of Andrew Holland. The video speaks for itself. The torture and death of Andrew Holland was completely avoidable. The resulting cover-up by the sheriff is an insult to the people of this county. No independent criminal investigation was ordered by the sheriff. The sheriff ruled Andrew's death as natural. Andrew's death was not natural. The proximate cause of his death by pulmonary embolism was being restrained in the chair for 46 hours naked in his own waste with little or no water. Andrew was left in that chair through 4 12-hour shift rotations. At any point, the sheriff could have ordered his release. At any point, a correctional deputy could have released Andrew and saved his life. If I had not stood up and had the courage to enter this election, we would not be engaged now in a vigorous public debate about what is right and what is wrong, about the appropriate way to humanely treat inmates versus abusing and torturing vulnerable, mentally ill inmates while in custody. Without an opponent, the sheriff would have continued with the cover-up, with the lack of accountability and the lack of transparency. Still, to this day, after the worldwide release of the video, after the worldwide condemnation of how Andrew was tortured and killed, the sheriff, while drifting from interview to interview on his apology tour in his effort to rehabilitate himself, he finally accepts responsibility for Andrew's death. What does that mean exactly? It means accountability with no consequence. It's time for new leadership. It's time to restore public confidence in our Sheriff's Department. Thank you.
Everyone's had an opportunity to clap vigorously and get that out of your system and support the candidates that you're here to support and the messages that they each have. I'd like to ask you not to do that for the questions, because then it would lessen the amount of information that you all can get, and also that the people who will watch this video later can get. So if you could restrain yourself, I'd really appreciate that. So we're going to get started, and we're going to start with Rick. We're going to pose your first question to Mr. Parkinson.
What actions do you propose to improve the image of the sheriff's office?
So what actions? I start with my prior history, my prior record of completing the things that I said I was going to complete. You know, when this campaign started, I really realized that my number one focus is this issue. My number one focus is not the campaign. My number one focus is making change in our community. We have a community problem. We have a community crisis, and it has resonated itself right here in San Luis Obispo. And the difficult part is that since even prior to taking office, I have been an advocate publicly for the mentally ill. And for this to happen has been very difficult. The way I restore public confidence is simply focusing on the tremendous amount of change that is taking place right now, every day in this county.
Thank you. Mr. Clayton, same question.
To enhance the image of the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department, we have to get all the members of our community involved in their sheriff's department. This is your sheriff's department. You need to be involved in it. You need to help me help our department rise above this situation and start a new beginning. We need to integrate every member of the community into the department. We need to lift up and train our department personnel and get them involved in community policing. It's important to continue with all the changes that are now occurring after the death of Andrew Holland. We need to implement additional changes there. And I think that the public would see, under new leadership, a new approach to the corrections and a new approach to the training for the folks that work in our jail. Thank you.
Angelica, your question to Mr. Clayton first.
Tell us what the different bureaus at the sheriff's office are and your plans for each.
Well, the sheriff's department currently has an organization of support services led by a chief deputy, custody operations by a correctional captain, and field operations by a chief deputy. Under support services, you have admin, backgrounds, records, custody is the honor farm in the jail and courts, and field operations, detective division, patrol, and crime. My first focus as sheriff, if elected, is to throw myself full-time into the reforms in the jail. I intend to find a warden, somebody with prison experience, to come in and operate our jail, because it is now a de facto prison. We no longer keep people there for 12 months. People are staying there for extended periods of time because of the changes in state law. So I want to implement a new leadership in the jail with a warden who's been trained in the California Department of Corrections.
Thank you, Mr. Parkinson.
Well, I rather than read from the list of the organizational structure, I'll say this. I obviously am very familiar with the organizational structure, so I'm going to move straight into changes. You know, over the last 6 years, law enforcement in this county has changed tremendously, and unfortunately, Mr. Clayton has not been part of that. AB 109 has, in fact, changed what we do. But one of the things that we have focused on in the jail that we continue to expand on, and that is jail programming. We have had the ability to affect inmates that come into custody with careers and jobs when they get out. And that remains a significant focus. I also formed a board to deal with mental health issues, and we have officially taken over the medical and mental health in the jail with the hiring of a chief medical officer position. And I think that chief medical officer position and having a one single point of contact regarding medical and mental health is extremely important and something we've been lacking for years in the jail. This board is going to help provide that insight and direction that has been so needed.
Thank you. Mark, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
What strengths do you feel you possess that your opponent does not possess?
Well, I'm going to start with experience. Mr. Clayton has 13 years of experience before he retired medically as a police officer. He was a line-level police officer. He did not have any supervision or management experience. This is a department that's 440 strong with hundreds of volunteers that are in and out of that agency with a $70 million budget, which requires experience and attention. The other thing that I think is extremely important that people kind of lose track of is the sheriff's job is bigger than just the department. The sheriff's job is the community. I have participated for years within the community in many different types of nonprofit programs, support, and integrated myself in the community because it was extremely important you get to know what the community is feeling, what they're needing, and actually involve them. And I've actually been part of that for the 34 years since I've been in law enforcement, and I don't think Greg possesses that background.
Mr. Clayton.
Yes, it's true that I have 13 years in law enforcement and 25 years in private investigations working for government agencies. That's very true. But my response is, how has all those years in law enforcement helped you when you came to the situation where Andrew Holland was held in the chair for 46 straight hours, resulting in his death? What kind of management and judgment was present when that occurred? So as far as I'm concerned, I have the ability to stand up and take responsibility if something happens in my department if I'm elected sheriff. I'll be the first one to the podium to take responsibility and, if need be, resign if that's needed, because that's what a leader does. I have the vision to lead the department. We have a chain of command full of managers. They know their jobs well, and they will manage that department. Your sheriff's department can operate 24/7 without the sheriff being present. It's that good. The people are that good. The organization's that good. The chain of command supports that. So I'm not worried about that, and I think I can lead the department forward. Thank you.
Okay. Rick, your question for Mr. Clayton, please.
Opioid overdose is a huge issue in the news now. And nationally, accidental overdose is the leading cause of death post-release. How do you intend on keeping our community safe from overdose once high-risk inmates are released back into the community?
I think it's important that in the reforms we put in the county jail and some of the programs that are already in place, that we continue with those to have after-treatment care for folks that are released from the county jail that are suffering from addiction situations. We need to step up our enforcement with our narcotics task force of the opiate situation. We have a horrible situation with heroin in this county. We cannot close our eyes to the continuing drug problem in this county, and that reaches from Paso Robles down to Napomo and over to our coast. I think it's important that we train all our correctional deputies in recognizing opiate overdose and responding with the appropriate medical care.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, significant things have changed. So over the time that I've been in law enforcement in this county, we have gone from having a very severe methamphetamine problem. Heroin was really taking a backseat to the more serious drugs, and that has all changed a number of years ago, and I would probably say about 8 years ago. And if you look around the community, we have sons and daughters that are in the age of 18 to 25 that are dying from heroin. Heroin has transferred transformed our community. It transformed our youth, and it is not it is not getting any lighter. We don't have a narcotics task force. We have a sheriff's task force because the narcotics task force was disbanded, and I took it over. Our number one focus has been heroin, and we've done a tremendous amount in that area. But then along came Prop 47, and Prop 47 changed everything. It took possession of heroin from a felony to a misdemeanor. So our battle has just begun, and I think we have to continue that fight together as a community.
Thank you. Angelica, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
How do you feel about establishing a bipartisan, independent citizens oversight council to review complaints against law enforcement?
That's to me first. Mm-hmm. I think we have to recognize two things. Number one, we do, in a sense, we have the grand jury that has a lot of flexibility and ability. When you talk about complaints within the agency, I have a very detailed complaint procedure that I put in place when I came in, both online, in public, about how to deal with complaints within the agency. I feel very strongly in discipline. I feel very strongly, and that is why I started the professional standards unit, opening it up to a group. I would say that I would not be opposed to, but what we have to be careful is that we have to have an educated group to understand the complexities of both the Bill of Rights for police officers and also for the respect of the privacy of individuals that are protected by law, not protected by a department, but protected by law. So having something like that would not be afraid of.
Okay. Mr. Clayton.
I'm a strong supporter of citizen oversight in all law enforcement. The two words that most police officers hate to hear is the word citizen oversight. It's difficult for a police officer in the field to realize that somebody might be looking over their shoulder that's not in law enforcement. I would propose that we establish a citizens oversight committee consisting of professionals in our community that volunteer their efforts to us. I don't want to get into a situation where we form a formal citizens oversight with their own office and their own budget and their own staff, because I think the costs are prohibitive for that.
Mark, your question for Mr. Clayton.
How and what would you change with officer training?
We have to go forward in this day and time and treat everybody with dignity and respect. We have to treat all the people in our community that have the misfortune of being booked into our county jail. We have to treat them with dignity and respect. I want to make sure that we have the training available to our correctional deputies and our field deputies, that we are being fair and impartial and treating everyone with care and respect despite the circumstances. We have empathy for the victims of the crime, and we teach and treat the violators of the crime with fairness and dignity. We don't abuse people in custody, and we don't abuse people in the field. So the first training that I would like to have established is to go along those lines in treating our officers and our correctional deputies with training in humanity.
Ms. Parkinson.
Well, for those who don't know, training in law enforcement is highly regulated. It's governed by both POST, Police Officers Standards and Training, and SDC, which governs the custody staff. It's extremely important, and it's extremely time-consuming for the requirements that we must fulfill every year. Beyond that, I've done a number of things, and I'm a little conflicted, because on one end that Mr. Clayton is talking about the faith in staff, I can tell you this, that the majority of staff in that jail and in that in the patrol division, I have hired, and I interview every single candidate that comes in the door, and my focus has always been customer service and respect, and those are two topics that get brought up everywhere. I believe that they do have that sense already. Expanding other areas, we just expanded and got certified to run a 40-hour crisis intervention training that had reduced itself by state standards to 8 hours, which I felt was ridiculous. So we expanded that training, which covers some of these areas that we're referring to and talking about.
Thank you. Rick, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
What is your position on sanctuary cities and state laws?
Well, this is an interesting one. SB 54, as many of you might know, was just passed and signed by the governor. I had some serious concerns about SB 54 going in, and I actually had a conversation with the governor in a meeting where, prior to him signing 54, my concern was this: if it has a negative impact on our immigrant community and they're afraid to report things, it's going to affect all of us. We have to protect the victim. 54 has a counter effect on that because it does not allow us to communicate with our federal partners. This is an issue that's already interrupted into our own community, and people being hauled off, their entire family, and we've literally confused the issue by trying to pass the ability for federal partners to come in and take a criminal out of the jail as opposed to going into our neighborhoods.
Mr. Clayton.
With the sanctuary state law in place, we in law enforcement, if I'm elected sheriff, have an obligation to safeguard our community. We will use every tool available at the discretion of the sheriff to hold all criminals accountable. Our inability to relinquish these individuals to the custody of ICE causes them to be returned to the communities in which they prey upon. As sheriff, I'm going to take a policy of releasing the release dates to the public of all individuals convicted of a violent crime that are incarcerated at our county jail. That way, hopefully, we can ensure that folks that don't belong in our community can be removed from our community and not continue to prey on our communities. Thank you.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Clayton.
What are your ideas on how the Sheriff's Department can implement culturally competent practices that take into account language barriers and diverse cultural beliefs?
One of my goals as sheriff is to diversify the leadership in the Sheriff's Department. As sheriff, you have certain abilities to appoint different folks to positions, and obviously, as the sheriff mentioned, you're going to be intimately involved in the hiring process. I'm looking to find people of color, people of diversity, and women, and rise them up in the organization so that they can lead the sheriff's department forward.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, I'll start by saying that we've already set out to do this a long time ago. Introducing women into the field was probably one of the best things that happened to law enforcement a number of years ago. I think minorities are always a very important part of what our community makeup is. You know, currently we have approximately 40 Spanish-speaking officers, and these officers are both in custody, in civilian jobs, and in patrol. And it's always been a great encouragement of mine to be able to get that Spanish-speaking deputies and employees in, because we have to reach out. And we've done a number of different outreach programs to our Hispanic communities, to our minority communities, because it's extremely important that they have faith in us. And one of the things that I think has really been beneficial is that we have really made some inroads in families that that have had a distrust for law enforcement in the past.
Mark, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
What are your ideas to address the problem of the chronically homeless who violate laws due to their homelessness and are then arrested and jailed?
Well, some of you may recall a couple years ago, I requested during budget to get two deputies that are focused on this issue. This is a rising issue in our community. We do not have enough homes. We're attracting them here. We have services. However, the services are never enough. Then we have to deal with the homeless that either have drug and alcohol problems, mental illness, or others. So this team of deputies, which in my 34 years, I never thought would be the case, are solely focused on getting these people out of the community or out of the street in a homeless situation and into programs that are already offered. They have no agenda or no requirement to try to arrest or move them. Their job is solely based on them trying to get them out of that situation, and many times through services that are already being offered. That's a program that I started that we are planning on expanding because of the need, and I think has been very beneficial already to the community and the homeless community.
Mr. Clayton.
When I first got involved in the 70s in law enforcement, we had a detox center here in San Luis Obispo up behind General Hospital. It gave us the ability to take homeless people that were suffering from addiction or alcoholism and transport them to a place where they would not be in a custodial setting and they wouldn't have the recidivism rate in our county jail. I would work and endeavor to have a detox center set up, hopefully throughout the county, so that we can start using that as the ability to cycle these folks so they get the care without having to be incarcerated in our county jail. Thank you.
Rick, your question for Mr. Clayton.
How have you been supportive of the mental health community over the last 10 years?
In the last 10 years, I've taken care of four grandchildren, so that's contributed to my lack of mental health. Now, I haven't done anything because I've been busy operating my private investigation firm and taking care of my family. I fully intend, if elected as sheriff, to get very involved in the mental health issues in our community to the benefit of all the folks that go through our county jail and to the folks that we're dealing with out in the field.
Thank you, Mr. Parkinson.
Well, I think I mentioned earlier that I've been an advocate for some time. I have participated in numerous events regarding discussion of these issues. I've been out numerous times on NAMI walks and presentations. I've been asked numerous times to give talks to their families. I've been very outspoken, I think, early on this subject. I've participated in other areas of mental illness that we don't always identify. Alzheimer's, our PTSD, soldiers returning. I've been extremely supportive of what they've done and spend many, many evenings and many, many weekends supporting their organization and their mission. We have to be involved, and this goes back to what I said earlier. You can't sit on the sidelines and complain about it. You have to be involved. And I've put my money where my mouth was. And over the last at least 7 years, I have actively participated in helping this issue where I can.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
Many legislative bills have passed that affect law enforcement. If you could change any bill, which one would it be and why?
Well, I would probably say Prop 47. We've discussed the issues with heroin overdose in our community and our youth. We've never seen such an epidemic in the past. I wish what they would have done, rather than make it a lesser crime, I wish what we would have done is we would have incentivized it, because I do believe that people deserve a second chance. I do believe that there's a way that they can combat drug and alcohol addiction, but specifically when you have a drug like heroin and you've decriminalized it to a misdemeanor, I think it makes it very hard and very difficult for people to be incentivized to treat. They are, I think, better off changing it to say that if you got treatment and you get your life together, that we would expunge it from your record. Not reduce it to a misdemeanor, but expunge it and give them a second chance, because every single day I see that in the jail, and every single day I see people that are really making an effort, but we have to have a system that allows them the ability to clean up their lives.
Mr. Clayton.
Proposition 47, Safe Neighborhoods and Schools Act, was passed by the voters. It recategorized our nonviolent offenses as misdemeanors, including drug and property offenses, shoplifting, drug possession, bad check writing among them. It raised the monetary limit for a felony offense from $400 to $950. I think what this created was we have criminals out there in our community that are now preying on victims and engaging in property crimes, and that's an issue that needs to be resolved, and that would be one thing that I would like to see change of Proposition 47.
Okay. Mark, your question for Mr. Clayton.
What reentry solutions have you or would you implement to help inmates reenter back into society as productive members of our community? And what programs have you been successful at reentry solutions?
Okay, on the second part of your question, I haven't taken office yet, so I don't have an answer for that. On the first part, I met with Sister Teresa at Restorative Partners and spent quite a bit of time with her. She explained all the programs with her staff that are going on in the jail, and I told her if elected that I would expand on all available programs available through the nonprofits. Sister Teresa worked very closely with my brother at CMC in the years that he was out there, and she had a great relationship with him, and I told her that I would maintain that relationship with her if elected, and that I would throw the doors to the jail open, and whatever program she had for job training, therapy, and any care of the inmates after they're released with follow-up would be welcomed.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, I think I mentioned when I entered the sheriff's office, we had about five programs. I actually met Sister Teresa within about a month of taking office. I brought Sister Teresa into the jail. We have over 30 programs. Our commitment to inmate behavior and inmate programs has been widely talked about. The training programs we have, job skill training programs that we've instilled in construction and in welding and graphic arts and in kitchen have all been geared toward keeping them off or out of trouble and employed, which is very critical that we give them an opportunity to be successful. We have made those changes, but it takes more than that. Sister Teresa runs a mentoring program. We have several other community groups that we've invested heavily in with our AB 109 money. Most of all of our AB 109 money after the initial start was for getting people back in and re-entered into our community and helping them. And there's many organizations other than Sister T that helps in the jail.
Rick, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
During your career as a sworn peace officer, what was your biggest accomplishment and when did it happen?
Well, I would probably have to say the biggest accomplishment was becoming sheriff, to be able to affect the change in the number of areas that we did meant a lot to me. But it's not, you know, when you talk about the office of sheriff, it's not you individually. It's your group, your men and women that do the job every day. They have to buy into your leadership. They have to buy into your vision. You have to set that vision. And I really felt very good going into my first year in office that not only did we have significant change, but I had significant support from staff wanting to make change. Things as simple as emotional intelligence, teaching employees how to deal with emotional people, how to control your own emotions. They were on board with that. They were they have bought into the new direction, the new changes in law enforcement that are unprecedented. And so I'm very proud of the fact that the men and women of the sheriff's office have integrated with the community and integrated with our different programs and moving forward.
Mr. Clayton.
In my 13-year plus tenure in law enforcement, I was very proud of the folks that I worked with at San Luis Obispo Police Department and earlier at the Sheriff's Department. I think we succeeded in providing quality law enforcement throughout the city of San Luis Obispo in the time that I was there. I look back on my time as an investigator working on crimes against persons and the effect that we were able to have on folks' lives working with the victims. And then I carried that on in my career for 25 years as a private investigator.
Thank you. Angelica, your question for Mr. Clayton.
If protocol for jail custodial staff is not followed, what do you believe is an appropriate response?
The appropriate response is to determine, obviously, which protocols were not followed, examine the written protocol, and find out if there's issues with that protocol, if it needs to be reexamined and changed. And then if you have a continuing problem with that, obviously you have to go through the disciplinary steps that are necessary, and that always starts with training. And if the folks need to be trained so that they follow the protocol, then we make sure that happens. But if elected sheriff, I want to take a close look and audit all the existing protocols and policies that are in place.
Mr. Parkinson.
Back when Mr. Clayton was in law enforcement, our protocols and procedures were made by officers and supervisors that were given these protocols. And since that time, there's been an evolution. Our protocols are actually considered state-of-the-art, but they're not without flaw, as we know. We've experienced that. We invest a lot of money in solid protocols and procedures, but a protocol and procedures designed to be a guideline, and those guidelines are under constant review. We go through our protocols and procedures every 3 to 6 months and have significant changes that affect those. We are under constant review of what is good and what is bad, and when we find something that's bad, we have an obligation to change it right away. The issue of whether they follow it or not, then certainly we could have a disciplinary or a training issue, but I think investing in solid protocols, solid procedures, and then following those and training people up to that those policies and procedures are extremely important. We count on our people to follow our procedures.
Okay. Thank you. Mark, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
Is there a plan to bring the death rate in our county jail down?
Well, there's always a plan to bring the death rate down. I think there's been a lot of discussion on what our death rate is and what is the cause of that. Medical, and as I have already stated, was not under me until recently. The majority of what we have had happen has been medically related. I think the interesting thing, if you go to the California Department of Justice and you look up the death rates in California and compare us to other counties per capita, you're going to find out that we are actually right in the middle since 2009 to present. Not this figure that's been put out there that we exceed the national average 3 to 4 times, but ideal death rate is zero, but we know that in our society that unfortunately people pass away. We represent with our death rate approximately less than 1% of rates in San Luis Obispo, as opposed to hospitals that account for 20 to 30%, and we have to reduce it.
Mr. Clayton.
The folks that are presented at the county jail are an at-risk group. We know that going in. These are folks that are homeless. They've lived a tough life. They're addicted. They have issues with alcoholism. Some of them are older, and they have natural health issues. We're going to have deaths in the jail. What's important for us to stop is putting folks in isolation for extended periods of time and then restraining them to the point where they pass away. That has to come to an end.
Rick, your question for Mr. Clayton.
Who has endorsed you?
I'm proud to say that I've been endorsed by the San Luis Obispo County Democratic Committee and the clubs involved with the Democratic Party in San Luis Obispo County, the San Luis Obispo County Progressives, Mayor Miriam Shaw of the Grover Beach Grover Beach City Council, and she's a Georgetown trained attorney and very intelligent. I've been endorsed by the labor unions, and have spent a great deal of time talking to them on a daily basis, seeking new endorsements. As a challenger, that's an uphill climb, but we're facing that challenge every day.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, I have a long list of support, and you can go to the website and actually read the diversity of support that I have. But I'm going to focus just for a second on your other police chiefs and your other law enforcement executives in this community. They have endorsed me. They see firsthand currently what is going on in our communities. They see the challenges that are faced because they experience the exact same challenges. They have come out in force to support me because they understand the problems that we're facing. I have ranges from attorneys to doctors to, you know, city councilmen, mayors that are all supporting me. I really think the value of an endorsement list is in the people themselves, less in the organizations, because I really feel that people understand the issues individually, and if they're willing to put their own personal name behind you and stand behind you, it says a lot. And when you look at my list and you see how long it is and you see how many people believe in me, you realize that these are people in our community that get it. They understand the challenges, and they understand that they need to stick behind somebody that can get the job done.
Angelica, your question will go to Mr. Parkinson first.
What do you think are the most significant challenges facing law enforcement, both in SLO County and cities and nationally?
Well, I'll say number one, mental illness. Right now, in county jails in California, we have almost 1,000 people that have been sent to or ordered to state hospitals that cannot go. That's almost a full hospital that's still pending. We have them sitting in our jails for months on end, and it's a huge, huge challenge. It's a cycle. And our duty on this issue is not only providing treatment in the jail that is well underway with probably the most significant backing this county has ever seen, the hiring of the chief medical officer to focus on inmate care, but more importantly is keeping the people out of the system, because we've seen this never-ending cycle of people going out and coming back in. And so it's just as important to have a robust group on the outside as it is inside. And that is our challenge. That is our number one challenge that we are facing, because we know it exists and we've ignored it for years.
Mr. Clayton.
I agree with Sheriff Parkinson. The number one problem in this county and our nation is mental health. When I started in law enforcement in 1978, we had 11 beds at the unit up on Johnson Avenue. It's expanded to 16 and recently added 4 more. We need 50 psychiatric beds for every 100,000 folks that are in our community. The largest repositories of mentally ill folks in the United States is Rikers Island, Cook County Jail in Chicago, and the Los Angeles County Jail. We have less than 4,000 psychiatric beds in the state of California with a population of 39 million. We need public policy to support funding for psychiatric beds and for mental health.
Thank you. Mark, your question for Mr. Clayton.
What does the Sheriff's Department do best, and what does the Sheriff's Department do worst?
I think the Sheriff's Department does an outstanding job of having a diversity of programs to help the citizens in this county. And I will applaud Sheriff Parkinson for rising the department up to that level. And it's an impressive collection of activities and programs for all the folks in this county. What I'm concerned about is the care and safety of the folks in the county jail. I think we've obviously let them down. In addition to the 12 deaths that we've experienced in the last 5 years and the death of Andrew Holland, we also have countless injuries that have occurred out there at the county jail that are now being litigated. We need to stop the injuries, we need to stop the abuse, and we need to take care of the folks that are in our custody.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, I'd say what we do best is I think we're very fortunate in San Luis Obispo. If you look at the adjoining counties or other counties in California, they have a significant recruitment problem. And we really have done well in getting quality people here that really care. I am proud of the fact that we do have a number of people out there that are working both in the jail and in the community that really wear their heart on their sleeve, and they don't get recognized for that. And I think that's important. I think what our struggle is we're a very large county geographically, and our population is spread out. And the challenge has always been is getting to calls at the right time. My focus has been on expanding our number of employees in both the jail and custody, and we've added over 60 positions both in the patrol and custody, and reduced our response time in the field and our ability to provide services within the jail that are very challenging at times due to the size and the build of the jail.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton. You did that. Rick, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
I'm 14 years old and in high school. What have you done or do you plan on doing to make schools even more safe in our county?
Well, that's it's a great question because it affects all of us, and I would focus on two areas. Since I have a minute, I'm going to be very fast. The first area is we installed the GRADE program, which is gang resistance education and training, but it's focused on changing behavior, nonviolent communication, bullying, all the things that are occurring and leading to some of these things. The second thing we've done is established a Sheriff's Summer Camp where we're integrating kids from different areas in order to become friends and break down those barriers and really integrate kids that might not have other friends. The other thing we have focused, the police chiefs and myself, on are really been integrating our response. We have mapping for every school, nearly every school in the county. We've just rolled out a panic button for 3,200 faculty members in all of our schools to alert them, to alert us to an active shooter to get us there as fast as possible. We are the first on the West Coast to get it. We're the first that I know of countywide to do mapping and a program like that to provide safety.
Thank you. Mr. Clayton.
What I'd like to see implemented in San Luis Obispo County is the ShotSpotter acoustic program that's used successfully in Fresno. And what this does is it alerts patrol units and dispatch instantaneously to the sound of a gunshot and gives the GPS coordinates, and it cuts the response time in half to our schools. This is a program that's cost-effective, and it's shown to be very effective in areas where we have issues with gunfire and in the issues around our 26, I believe, rural schools that the Sheriff's Department has to watch over. I'm concerned that we maintain the funding for all our school resource officers and we maintain a presence on the campus, and that those school resource officers are routinely checking the social media for any signs of an issue that could come up.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Kling.
Are you experiencing any significant problems policing the newly licensed marijuana institutions in Slo County? And has there been a rise in MJ DUI?
Yeah.
Well, since I'm not in law enforcement, I haven't had that experience. So I do anticipate with the licensing of the cannabis retail stores that we're going to have a possible uptick in criminal activity, and we still have to be concerned about black market in that regards. And so if elected sheriff, we would focus on those issues and make sure that the folks in our county were in complete compliance.
Mr. Parkinson.
Since the passing of recreational marijuana, it's ever evolving. So trying to figure out where our next steps are really important. We've been very involved in the process. What it actually has done is it moved some of the people that are trying to do it legally out of the enforcement module and into the regulation mode, similar to alcohol. Our challenge is and will continue to be on the rural lands that we have. The cartels are not out of the marijuana business. It's too much money, and there's no borders protecting California from any of the other states that still have it illegal. We continue to see the destruction of our land from these grows and big money involved in this. And with the passing of 54 in addition, it's going to make it more challenging because now it's a misdemeanor to illegally grow, and that means that anybody that comes up will not remain in custody, so they'll continue the trade. And so for us, it is continuing to focus on the illegal activity, and we spend a tremendous amount of time with now two dedicated marijuana enforcement detectives.
Mark, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
What is the relative importance of involving engaged family members in the process of rehabilitating inmates in the county jail?
Well, I think it's extremely important. Family is part of, you know, part of their rehabilitation. We introduced video visitation a couple of years ago, and we're actually in the process of changing that again because, quite frankly, I'm not satisfied with what it provides. We want that connection to family. Our goal is to reduce the cost and allow more access to that because there's a lot of families that actually can't come down to the jail to visit and integrate. Also, maintaining that relationship while they're in custody and being able to transition out and for them to help them and many times relocate because, quite honestly, we could have the best rehabilitation programs in jail and in custody, and they get out and they go right back into those same environments around those same people. They're going to reoffend again. And so having those families on board that truly understand the issue they're having with addiction and trying to integrate them back into those families that care about them deeply and want to get them out of the problem.
Mr. Clayton.
Family is everything. Family is everything to every person in this room. Andrew Holland's family, Cardi and Sharon, are sitting right here in the front. They went repeatedly to visit with their son Andrew at the county jail and were turned away over and over and over. It's important that we realize that these folks that are in jail need to have family contact. They need to be able to visit with their loved ones so that they can see hope on the other end when they come out. We can't turn away families. They're key to the rehabilitation, they're key to the future, and they're key to when these folks reintegrate in our community so that they're productive citizens.
Thank you. So we're now at the one-hour mark, so I'm going to give the candidates just a few seconds to catch their breath. And thank you very much. You've all been just very polite and civil, and I really appreciate that. I want to remind you that the League of Women Voters is still accepting questions. So we do have some runners around who, if you have a question written out, just hold up your card or hold up your hand, and she'll give you a card. I see someone up front that would like to hand over a question. So take a minute to do that. And I'll also take a minute to remind everyone that Latino Outreach Council and the League of Women Voters is proud to present these candidates forums. We will be doing a candidates forum on April 25 for the judicial candidates. We have four judicial candidates. It's very rare in this county that we have candidates running actively for judicial office. So I think you'll find that very interesting and hope you'll attend. That's April 25 here at 5:30. The district attorney campaign will candidates forum will be on May 9. And the second district on April 20. For supervisor for second district, and we are going to be hosting the fourth district supervisorial race also coming up in early May. So if you've had a second to take a breather, we'll ask you to take a seat because we are still live on the air, and I would ask that we resume in about 30 seconds. Please take this moment to bring your questions to the front of the dais for the league. Okay. All right, we're ready to get started. Yeah. All right, so we're going to resume now. So, Rick, you're going to have the next question.
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Rick, your next question is posed to Mr. Clayton.
Actually, I would say, how would you or how do you balance the media and public demand for a quick response to an incident and conducting a thorough investigation?
Okay, so if I understand your question, it's how we deal with the media at an emergency situation?
Yes. I'll read it to you again. How would you balance the media and public demand for a quick response to an incident and conducting a thorough investigation?
Well, the priority will always be to conduct the investigation. That is paramount to what we do if elected as a sheriff and what the folks working under me will do. The investigation is the priority. We will be open with the media and provide them information in due course as long as it doesn't interfere with our investigation. If elected sheriff, I plan to have an open relationship with the media, total transparency, and total accountability.
Thank you, Mr. Parkinson.
Well, I agree with Mr. Clayton. The difficulty is this. You have legal responsibility. You have responsibility for an investigation that you certainly don't learn in a very short period of time. In other words, it has to take time to unfold to tell you the answers. We have an obligation to make notice as soon as practical, as soon as possible. And that's going to be based on where the investigation is and what it could jeopardize, if anything, in the investigation. That has to take priority, as Mr. Clayton said. I've seen a lot of different types of events, and I think trying to present those items out to the media as soon as possible is extremely important, but it's got to be balanced because we have to respect the rights of the people involved. We have to respect the rights of the victims, and sometimes it's a matter of that's going to take second fiddle to conducting the investigation and protecting the rights of the victims.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
Impressions exist that undocumented immigrants are committing felony crimes disproportionate to their numbers. What are the facts?
That goes to Mr. Parkinson first.
Well, I don't know what numbers they would be referring to, but it's a low percentage for one. It is not a huge percentage. It's interesting, Mr. Clayton mentioned earlier about release times for the people committing the crimes or release dates. We do that already. We've done that well ahead of Orange County. We've done it for some time. I think it's realistic, though, that we have to be, you know, we have to share that with the community. People have to understand that we are not, we do not have a disproportionate number. It is no different from any other number. And I think, unfortunately, when those things get presented to the public, it puts people in fear. It puts people in fear of reporting. It puts people in fear of really being an active member in our community. So dispelling that and saying that, you know, it represents probably 2% or, you know, of our population in custody, I think is realistic. It's not a huge number, and it's not any more different from anything else. So I think any chance we get to dispel that is the right thing for the community, and that way we don't have that issue of fear and fear of reporting.
Mr. Clayton.
I agree with Sheriff Parkinson on that. On average in our population, about 8% of the folks have ever been convicted of a crime. That's a very small percentage. And our folks in the Hispanic community are very hardworking folks. They're all family people. I don't see that as a huge problem in our county. I think that the in-custodies reflect that at the county jail.
Okay. Mark, your question for Mr. Clayton.
Where do you believe the responsibility of the sheriff lies in monitoring the day-to-day operations of the jail?
I think it's important that the sheriff sets the tone for what is the leadership in the jail. He's going to be the individual that establishes the command structure. He's going to be the individual that directs his management team to provide the training to the folks that operate in the jail. I think if I'm elected sheriff, I'm going to dedicate myself to the jail operation, and I'm going to find myself a highly talented undersheriff to operate the field divisions, and we're going to change the culture of indifference in the jail. We're going to treat people with respect and dignity, and we're going to reduce the number of injuries and deaths in the jail. We're going to expand on the health programs and the mental health programs, and I look to establish a psychiatric care unit in the jail facility of 10 to 20 beds so we're not dependent on the PUF unit up on Johnson Avenue.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, again, I'm concerned that earlier Mr. Clayton said that we have very competent staff and command staff, and I think that is extremely important. The command staff that is present has grown in the agency. When we talk about the jail, I established the jail command position, and the reason why is because prior to my arrival, it was a patrol chief deputy position that may or may not have had any experience in the jail. And I felt that that was not the way we should be running it. Mr. Clayton mentions a warden. We effectively have that system in place for some time. That is not a structural change that needs to be made. He comes in with no experience in the jail, and same as me, but I had direct experience in law enforcement at the time. The jail is extremely important, and oversight is extremely important. But he would find that we work a tremendous amount of hours, and you cannot possibly watch everything all the time, and you have to rely on your talented staff, as I think the words he used earlier.
Okay. Rick, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
Would you support legislative changes with regards to police violence, such as reasonable force versus necessary force or the use of deadly force?
Well, I think when you're talking about the current legislation being proposed, no, I have serious concerns about the safety of all involved there. I do believe in policing the police, and that's why I opened the professional standards unit. As a matter of fact, that question came up earlier today, and I pointed out that when I entered office, there was no accountability on use of force in the sheriff's office. I changed that policy. I changed it to where every use of force, which means any complaint of pain or more, has to be investigated and documented, and that use of force comes all the way up to my office for review and signature, every single one. I think that's vitally important that we have accountability for use of force with our deputies and in some cases officers. I've always believed in that, and I put my money where my mouth was and implemented a program of accountability in that area. I think that needs to continue throughout the state.
Mr. Clayton.
I agree with the sheriff on that. It's important that we realize what the levels of use of force are and that the public understands those. And we want to start at the lowest level when we're dealing with any individual in the field or in the jail. We don't want to escalate that to the point where we cause injury or death to anyone unnecessarily. The concern I have on the use of the restraint chair, it is a use of force. It's a barbaric use of force as founded by the Federal Court of Appeals in Northern Florida in 2005, that they found that the use of the restraint chair was barbaric restraint and causing pain without reason. So I think it's important that we look at all the different restraints that we use as uses of force, that we examine our deputies' use of force in the field, and we hold everyone accountable.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Clayton.
Can you please speak to your education and how that would be an asset to your performance as sheriff?
I hold a Bachelor of Arts degree in political science from Cal Poly with a minor in public administration. I hold a general studies degree from Cuesta College. I have dedicated myself to making certain that I had adequate education in my field. I think it's important to graduate from high school. I think it's important to go to college and obtain that degree and invest in yourself. I think it's taught me a lot about myself and my ability and approach to solving problems.
Wilkinson. Well, I have not completed my bachelor's degree, like Mr. Clayton. I have sufficient units, but I have never completed it. I've always wanted to. I come from a very highly educated family. I certainly understand the value and the need to that. I've invested myself since the age of 19 in this job, learning the job and being educated in that way. There's certainly value in having it, but there's not. I don't think you're disvalued because you don't complete. There's a number of successful people that we see every day, and I think the area of education that is extremely important is in the area of law enforcement, and that's what I have done for 34 years in training and experience, learning the job that I'm responsible to perform, and completing the remaining classes probably, I would say, would not help me, even though that I would love to be able to say for myself, not for anybody else, that I completed.
Mark, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
What should be done to help the mentally ill in jail?
Well, those endeavors are underway. The grand jury pointed out a year ago, that there was concern that there was three different entities in charge of an inmate in custody, that they saw a great flaw with that. Between the consultant coming in and examining all the different practices of medical and mental health in the jail, between the committee, the committee of people in this community dealing with the issue every day, we came up with a long list of things that we could do. And the first step was getting the chief medical officer position that I just obtained just a short month ago. That gives us unity of command with the system and one point of person to contact and deal with this issue. We're also in contract negotiations and discussions with the state of California to do a 10-bed facility and open up our own facility within the jail. Treatment is vital that has not been done before, and I hope under my leadership and the support of the Board of Supervisors and the county that we're going to make all of this a reality very soon.
It's vitally important that we treat our folks that are mentally ill in our jail with care and compassion, have empathy for them. 30-40% of the folks that are booked in our county jail are suffering some form of emotional or mental illness. They need to have treatment available to them. We need to avoid using isolation, which causes them to decompensate if they're not under their medicines. We need to make sure they have human contact and stimulation. And like I said earlier, I want to make sure that we establish a psychiatric care unit in the jail, just as the sheriff just mentioned, so that we can treat them on site and return them to the general population without causing any injury to themselves or the other inmates, and definitely not to the correctional deputies.
Thank you. Rick, your question for Mr. Clayton.
What would you like to accomplish as sheriff should you be elected?
As sheriff, if I'm elected, as just I mentioned, that I want to address reforms in the county jail. I want to make sure that we have adequate personnel for psychiatric nurses, psychiatric technicians, and a full-time psychiatric doctor available. I want to have that psychiatric care unit established so that we can take care of these folks while they're in our custody, so we don't abuse them or cause any issues that are detrimental to their health. I want to make sure that we look forward to separating the sheriff from the coroner position so that we don't have a situation of conflict in the future where the sheriff determines the manner of death, where a pathologist determines the cause. I want to remove the conflict when law enforcement determines the manner of death, when we have folks that have died at the hands of law enforcement.
Thank you. Mr. Parkinson.
Well, I'll say that the areas that Mr. Clayton has talked about in public format and here somewhat tonight are all ideas and direction that has been presented months ago and has been at various stages of completion already. So these aren't new ideas. These are ideas that the community themselves, the people that deal with this issue day in and day out, have come up with and presented to me that in turn was presented in front of the Board of Supervisors in public format. And even though we're in agreement of the system, the change of the system, the change in this the system, you know, I go back, I asked 4 years ago to see a change in our medical mental health care and take it over because there was a conflict. It's unfortunate that it took a tragedy to bring this about, but I am confident that the ideas that were presented, the ideas that we've moved forward with, have been directed at changing the way we care for our inmates, both medically and mentally, within our custody, and they're in various stages of completion now.
Okay.
And I'm already elected.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
What is your position on bullying, terrorism, and racist behavior?
I have no place for it whatsoever. I've made it very clear within our agency to the public. I mentioned earlier that the GREAT program is all about bullying in schools, about acts of terrorism within our community. These issues have been common, you know, common conversation these days. We have focused on single issues and not the root cause of what has been happening at a very young age. I actually had a very good meeting back a few weeks ago with the superintendents of all the schools, and I attended one a few years ago, and I walked out of that meeting a little concerned that they weren't on the same page. But I can tell you, fast forward to a few weeks ago, I was extremely impressed of how they're focusing on that issue at a young age, because those issues have to be dealt with at a very young age, and we have to be able to identify them and change that behavior, and we need our partners in the schools. It's family schools that are really going to have an impact on that.
Clayton.
Stopping bullying in our schools is key to our young people's lives. We have to be ever vigilant to make sure that we have programs in place with our department that are assisting the school teachers in maintaining control over any bullying activities that are concerning. Racism on any level is never acceptable in any segment of our society and not to be tolerated. I'm very dismayed at the recent behavior at Cal Poly of the fraternity members, and that should not be occurring in 2018, but yet we're still faced with that on occasion. As far as terrorism, we have to be vigilant in our county for any acts of terrorism, and we need to make sure that our deputies and other folks in our department are proactive in their vigilance.
Thank you. Mark, your question for Mr. Clayton.
Should the coroner's office be independent of the sheriff's office? If yes, why? And if no, why not?
As I earlier discussed, yes, I believe that we should establish an independent medical examiner in the county of San Luis Obispo. We need to separate the coroner's function from the sheriff's function. Now, that's a constitutional position, and it's going to require approximately four years of effort and a vote of the citizens of this county to effect that change. But I think it's a positive change, and it gives accountability to the people that live in this county to realize that the sheriff will not be determining the manner of death. With Andrew Holland, his death was determined as natural. There was nothing natural about his death. I don't think that was a decision that should have been held by the sheriff's department. We need independent medical examiners to make those decisions so that law enforcement has accountability.
Mr. Parkinson.
I don't have an objection to the coroner's office being removed. We are the norm. There's very few sheriff's offices in California that have a separate medical examiners. And to the most part, it's because they're very large agencies. They have a tremendous amount of responsibility that's separate from the sheriff. The bulk of the sheriff's offices in California have the same system we have. I've implemented a number of changes on our side, and I understand the concern of manner. But we have the first ever full-time pathologist this county has ever never had one, and unfortunately, you know, we had to move that way because of the demand for and need. We also opened up our first ever Corners facility and really built it and did it with the assistance of the Sheriff's Advisory Foundation and no taxpayer additional money. I think it was a significant change. But Mr. Clayton's right. It's a constitutional issue because it's a constitutional office with the sheriff position.
Thank you. Rick, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
If it appears the candidates are preferred by one or another passionately polarized political community, can the candidate serve the entire community, polarized young and old, with compassion and empathy?
100%. It's our duty and our responsibility. We serve everybody. We have to maintain that. We have to be willing to reach out to everybody and really the categories that you stated. It's our responsibility and it's expected.
Mr. Clayton.
The cooperation of the public with law enforcement is the foundation of the success of every law enforcement agency that's ever existed. It's very important that we conduct the office of the sheriff in a nonpartisan manner. That way we treat everybody with the same level of fairness and respect and dignity. If elected sheriff, there's no room for partisan politics in the sheriff's department. There's no room for partisan politics in law enforcement. We need to come together as a community and work together to solve our law enforcement issues so that we all have a greater quality of life.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Clayton.
Please explain what you know about SB 54 and the Truth and Trust Acts.
I'll have to refresh my memory on SB 54, so I'll pass that to Mr. Parkinson.
Okay, so basically we're dealing with three different laws. SB 54 has been discussed earlier. That has to do with allowing local law enforcement to communicate with ICE. And essentially what it says is if somebody does not have a prior conviction for a violent felony, which excludes actually some of what we would all deem a violent felony, we cannot communicate with ICE at all, even if they're in our custody, even if they know they're in our custody. The Trust Act has to do with, it was a earlier version of 54 that basically said if it's a low-level misdemeanor, a low-level crime, we could not communicate with them then. And then the Truth Act is giving an inmate the ability to decline to be interviewed or talk to ICE. There's also two other case decisions that have come into play. And also the important thing to people for people to understand, we do not have a right. Local law enforcement does not have a right to enforce immigration. It is a civil violation. Unless there is a warrant out for them, we do not have a right.
Mr. Clayton.
So what we have to realize is administrations are going to change in this state. We got a governor that's getting ready to step down and a new governor elected. The law could change. We have to be prepared to make those changes. And throughout my life at age 60, I've seen numerous changes in the immigration law. I saw changes while I was working the streets as a law enforcement officer from year to year on whether we could or could not talk to folks about their immigration status. I think it's important now that we respect the laws that are in place in the state of California, as this is a sanctuary state, but we also have to respect the families here that are working hard and contributing to our society and taking care of their families and make sure that they're not displaced. And we need to focus our attention on the violent criminals, and that would be the duty of the Sheriff's Department.
Mark, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
What is your assessment of gangs in our county? How can we better combat gang violence?
So I always remind people that we're surrounded, our county's surrounded by severe gang issues. Fresno, Santa Maria, Salinas. Those gangs' problems are migrating to us. And it's sad because we have some wonderful communities in Santa Maria and southern Monterey County that have been taken over. It's been my mission to expand the gang task force, and we have expanded it. We've nearly doubled the the size of it since I came in on the enforcement side, and I think that's really important. We've deployed street units that are solely focused on contacting gang members, which I think is important. We also have in this county the AGCC, Anti-Gang Coordination Committee, and then we established the GREAT program. The GREAT program is trying to address this issue at a young age before they get older. Once they get into gangs, it's extremely difficult to get them out, and we have made that a focus and priority to keep them out of our county.
Mr. Clayton.
I agree with the sheriff that we have a tremendous gang problem surrounding the county of San Luis Obispo. MS-13 has established a foothold in Santa Maria, and you see it daily with the shootings and the stabbings and the other gang activity that occurs down there, and that migrates over into southern San Luis Obispo County and affects our county residents in the Napomo area. We have to make sure that we stay vigilant, and we maintain our gang task force, and we work closely with probation and our other partners in law enforcement to make sure that we stem that tide of gang activity. And then we're also concerned deeply about the Fresno activities that migrates into our county from the east and what's happening up in King City and down through the Salinas area.
Thank you. Rick, your question for Mr. Clayton.
Do you feel the DA should investigate deaths at the jail?
Yes, I feel strongly that the district attorney should have been invited to conduct an independent criminal investigation of the death of Andrew Holland. I found in my research a 2004 case when Sheriff Pat Hedges was our sheriff, where a young man, age 27, who was a schizophrenic, died in a safety cell. And I noted in my research of that incident that our district attorney was invited by Sheriff Hedges to come in and conduct an independent criminal investigation of the death of that young man. I think it's important to note that at this point, a year and several months after the death of Andrew Holland, we have not had an independent criminal investigation. I think it's paramount that we have complete cooperation with the district attorney's office and invite them in to do investigations when we need to have complete transparency and accountability.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, the issue of whether the DA is truly independent in the sense that we have a true partnership in this county would certainly be scrutinized if that had been the case. Back in April, I stood side by side with the supervising agent in charge of the FBI Los Angeles office, and I announced at that point that I had requested that they come in, and I was going to ask them to conduct a truly independent investigation into Andrew's death. That was televised. They were standing right next to me when I made that announcement. And I think that was truly the independent investigation. I think if I had done it the other way, I think we'd be sitting here tonight, and I think you would be offering criticism for allowing the DA, who works so closely with us, to come in and conduct that investigation. And I felt it was best to have the FBI LA office conduct an independent investigation, and that is why I asked him to be here to make that announcement back in April.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
Have you or how do you plan to connect and share your ideas with the current correctional staff? How will you support them, and do you have their support?
Well, I would start by saying that, yes, I meet with them all the time. I go into the jail at least a couple times a week. I have staff meetings that include the entire staff, from sergeants to lieutenants to the captain, so first-level supervision to management to executive staff, weekly, monthly. They're all prescribed set meetings. I also meet with the Deputy Sheriff's Association, which is representing the correctional staff, and I have monthly meetings with them to discuss their concerns at a line level, so it comes straight to the top to me as opposed to a potential filter between different ranks in the Bureau. I do that with all my unions in order to hear what they see directly, so it's not the potential of being compromised. I do have their support. The Sworn Deputy Sheriff's Association has endorsed me. We're waiting to see if the Deputy Sheriff's Association themselves will endorse, but I have many, many deputy from that or from that organization that have already endorsed me personally.
Mr. Clayton.
I made it a point to meet and listen to senior correctional staff that have visited me at my office in San Luis Obispo. They came to me on their own accord. I welcomed them, and I listened to their concerns, and I noted their concerns. I met with the DSA leadership, and I expressed the changes and reforms that I want to implement if elected as their sheriff. I told them that there would always be a seat at the table for their input, and I would value the input from the senior correctional staff to assist in operation of the jail and operation of all the programs that we're going to implement. I think it's important that we recognize that our correctional deputies do a job that very few people would ever want to do. They go to jail on a daily basis. They're working long hours. They're working forced overtime because of staffing shortages. I listen to them. I will meet with them on a consistent basis, and I'll make it a priority to have their input on a daily basis if necessary.
Hey, Mark, your question for Mr. Clayton.
There is human trafficking happening in our county since we are located in between Los Angeles and San Francisco. What plans do you have to combat human trafficking?
Like I said earlier, it's very important that we have complete cooperation with the public in doing our job in law enforcement. That means we can't have eyes everywhere. We need the folks to tell us what's going on, what they see, what they observe. We have to be vigilant on our missing persons. We have to be vigilant on our activities in and around our hotels. We have to monitor the social media, and then we have to rescue these people. We have to get them out of the clutches of these individuals that are controlling them and maintaining the human trafficking. So that would be a priority for the department if elected sheriff.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, right now we have a human trafficking organization that's made up of community members. It's made up of law enforcement. It's made up of the DA's office that we meet regularly. So some of the things that Mr. Clayton's talking about within the community are already in existence and have been in existence for probably close to 2 years now. I agree with him that the community is important. Matter of fact, yesterday I just gave a talk to a Rotary in Morro Bay on this subject because I think it's extremely important to educate that it's happening all the time. We have had several cases here, one of which was the Sheriff's Office case out of Cayucas, where they received sentences upwards of 60 to 100 years in prison for the activity. I think the identification, the understanding of this existing is part of the challenge, but we have a task force that has been operating already and that continues to operate, so we are ahead of the curve on trying to combat it and educate our community as to how bad this really is.
Thank you. Rick, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
Follow-up in a sense. How do you deal with an individual who's charged with a crime but may also be a victim, such as human trafficking?
Well, there's actually a law on that. I know that's strange to believe in California that we have a law on it, but it's an important law. It's an extremely important law that what we're finding is these 15, 17-year-old underage children that have been essentially kidnapped and in modern-day slavery forced to do this and even branded by their captor. It's really a horrific thing. And I think the law was intended to say that they're being forced into this, and even though they might be committing a crime through prostitution, the reality is they're a victim, and they should not be prosecuted for this. And I think that was the intent for passing the law. I think it's a very good law. I think it's the right thing to do in the right situation, and we need to focus on the people that are doing that, not the poor men and women, youth that are being forced into this really bad situation.
Mr. Clayton.
Care of the victim in that situation is the number one priority. Pursuing prosecution of that victim should never happen. We should protect that victim from prosecution. We need to get them the care and treatment that they need so that they can be reestablished with their families. So the priority is empathy and compassion for the victim and provide them with what they need.
Helica, your question will go to Mr. Clayton.
How would you prioritize a thorough and transparent investigation into an officer-involved event? For example, a shooting, excessive use of force, misconduct, civil rights violation.
That's a loaded question. There's umpteen parts to that. Okay, so the priority is do the investigation, like I said earlier. The number one priority is to get there on the ground and do the complete professional investigation, no matter what the circumstances are. And there's a number of circumstances in that question, and I only have a minute to respond. The priority is that there are always going to be a victim of the crime. It could be our deputies that are the victims. It could be a citizen that are the victims. We have to protect the integrity of the scene. We have to protect the integrity of the investigation, and that would be the priority.
Okay, Mr. Parkinson.
Well, I agree with Mr. Clayton. The investigation is important, but having the proper policies, the procedure, the people that are going to conduct that investigation is equally important. As I mentioned earlier, there was no policy, there was no procedure, there were no practices before I came in to the sheriff's office that were adequate. Instilling those into the agency with documentation, with the proper training of how those are investigated was key. And that is something that I recognized right away that needed to change. So that investigation should be including all witnesses, victims, you name it. It should be documenting all that. And then the determination is made. If there is misconduct, then we should be looking at the California Department of Justice to be prosecuting that case, to remove it from the local authorities.
Okay. Mark, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
What are your most significant qualifications to continue on as sheriff or to be running for sheriff?
Well, I have 34 years experience in law enforcement. I've supervised, I've managed, I've been an executive at every level. I understand what leadership is. I understand what it's like to do an evaluation on somebody. I understand what it's like to discipline somebody. I have been at all those different levels. In addition, we have a $70 million budget. I came from the city of San Luis, where I was second in command and had responsibility over a $15 million budget. That was a lot of work just at a $15 million budget range. But I learned from it, and I grew to the county's, to the sheriff's office, $70 million budget. You can't replace that experience. You can't simply rely on everybody else to do that work for you. And you certainly don't learn it from being never experiencing it. So I bring that continue to the table. I think we've managed our budget extremely well. I think we've been very cognizant of overspending for the county and come in under budget and ask for only resources that we need and can show we need.
Thank you. Mr. Clayton.
As a candidate for the sheriff's office, I bring the life experience of being on both sides of law enforcement, having worked as a sworn officer and then worked as a private investigator and worked on the side of criminal defense, which gives me a unique perspective on the folks that are in our community and the challenges that they're facing. And that goes both ways with the challenges that we faced as law enforcement officers and the challenges that are faced by the folks that are arrested and prosecuted in our county. I think it's important to note that training and experience over time is a vital asset to anyone that's going to take a leadership position. We have managers in the Sheriff's Department that do an effective job. We need a leader with vision. I have the vision to move the department forward, and I would hope that that vision would enable us to solve these issues that we're faced with today.
Thank you. Rick, your question for Mr. Clayton.
Do you feel that you are physically fit to perform the office of sheriff and law enforcement?
Absolutely. So let's just get the elephant out of the room. I have a 19% disability. Chief Jim Gardner is present here tonight. He was the one that led me down that path of being retired on a forced industrial retirement. I hired an attorney and I fought it, and the attorney lost. So at a young age, I was forced into industrial retirement against my wishes. And I proceeded to then get my private investigator's license and have maintained a business for 25 years. I've gone nonstop for the last 3 months, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. I have no physical disabilities. I'm fully competent to take on the job of the Sheriff's Department. It's an administrative job. I don't intend to be out patrolling the streets of Shandon at 2 o'clock in the morning, but if the need arises, I'll certainly be up for it.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, with all due respect to Mr. Clayton, I'm assuming what he's saying is he's canceled his retirement benefit because he is physically fit. I've known him for a long time, and I know the fact that I've never doubted his will. That has never been a concern of mine. But this is not this is a very demanding job. I put in 11-hour work days. I do evenings. I do weekends. I know that, and I appreciate the fact that Greg spent time away from his grandchildren. I've spent many hours away from my family as well. But it's demanding both mentally and physically. You do not just sit at a desk and do administrative work, as it's been stated before. The public expectation is if I see something happen, that I have the ability and I have the authority to act as a peace officer and intervene. And I have done that. And I expect that.
Angelica, question for Mr. Parkinson.
What is the most common crime committed by MS-13?
Well, understand, MS-13 is like no other gang. We participated in the large sweep that occurred down in Santa Maria when they arrested, almost a dozen gang members. They are an extremely violent gang. If you look back at those stories that occurred, and then Chief Ralph Martin, you understand that the crimes that they were committing, the murders that they were committing, were not random murders. They were targeted murders, and they were targeted in other gangs to send a message that they're in town and they own the town. There is not anything that we have seen in this area that is more violent than MS-13. They certainly do everything else that a gang does, sell drugs, steal things that they profit from. But when we talk about the most serious thing, it's murder, and they don't discriminate. And I think once they've infiltrated, it's very difficult to get rid of them.
Mr. Clayton.
I agree with Sheriff Parkinson on MS-13. If you watch the news for the Monterey County, Salinas area, all the way down through Santa Maria and Santa Barbara County, murder is the number one tool of MS-13. And they do it to establish their territory. They do it to establish their revenue streams through illegal activities. And I agree with the sheriff. They do specifically target individuals and to send a message to everyone else in the community. We need to make sure that we're vigilant and we have our gang task force in place. Homicides are difficult to prevent because they happen on the spur of the moment at times, and if we don't know it's coming, we don't have the people in place to stop it. But we have to be vigilant with the gang activity and try to shut them down at every opportunity.
Mark, your question for Mr. Clayton.
How would you work with the district attorney, Superior Court, or other county departments to ensure access to diversion or rehabilitation programs?
If elected sheriff, I intend to work very closely with the district attorney's office and the courts and the other departments in the county of San Luis Obispo to make certain that we are using all our ability to divert folks into the necessary programs so that their issues are dealt with. I would like to see us stop cycling low-level mentally ill inmates through the criminal justice system. I think we need to identify them early on and get them diverted into programs that can maintain their care and get them reunited with their families. I think that would take a load off of the county jail and reduce our recidivism rate. We need to break that cycle of rotating these low-level misdemeanor mentally ill individuals through our county justice system.
Mr. Parkinson.
There has been in place a program with the district attorney's office that they started, I think, almost 2 years ago on diverting these low-level criminals out of the system. And I've always supported it. I think it's a great way of going. It's a great way of keeping people out of the system. You know, but there's another step that I think that's important. And with AB 109 came the idea of split sentences. And one of the things that we have worked closely with the defense bar on, and deputy DAs, is that when an inmate reaches a point in their sentence, they're able to be released early. And in order to do that, the criteria that we've established is really having them checked whether they're participating in programs, whether or not they have a job when they get out, whether they have living when they get out. And we work very closely because we want the success. I can tell you I've run into at least three inmates who I didn't know, you know, from Adam, that have approached me and thanked me for all the services that we did for them in the jail to change their life. And it's a result of really being diverted from the system.
Okay. Rick, your question for Mr. Parkinson.
Do you promise to personally investigate every jail death?
Well, I am involved in every investigation at my level. That has been the way since I've been in office. When you talk about personally investigate, you know, the job of sheriff, you have to rely on investigators, either both from your office or assisting agencies where necessary. You know, to say that you would personally conduct the investigation in the way this question sounds would be next to impossible to do and very impractical. But being involved in every case and reviewing every case and understanding every case has been my practice, and I believe that whoever is in that spot should be doing the same.
Mr. Clayton.
We're going to have deaths in the county jail that don't require a criminal investigation. We're going to have folks that die of a heart attack. It's going to happen. We need to understand that. But we are going to have deaths in the county jail that are going to require investigation. The investigation should be done independently of the sheriff's department. In the case of Andrew Holland, if I was sheriff, I would have notified the Department of Justice and had an independent criminal investigation conducted by the Department of Justice. In all likelihood, that investigation would be concluded now, and the issues that have caused such vigorous public debate may not be to the forefront if we had done that in the beginning. It's important that we maintain accountability and transparency in law enforcement. The public demands that. We should demand it of ourselves if we're in law enforcement. We should use the tools that are available to us, and the Department of Justice can and will provide independent investigation if we have an individual that's died at the hands of law enforcement.
Okay. Thank you. We have time for one more question. So, Angelica, your question for Mr. Clayton.
Many of the mentally ill refuse treatment. How would you ensure people who need mental help get it, like those who are cycling through the system?
Okay, it's important for the public here in San Francisco County to realize, as Sheriff Parkinson has pointed out, in the past we could not medicate, we could not force medicate over objection mentally ill inmates in our county jail. Now, with the chief medical officer in place through the Stepping Up initiative, they have the ability to medicate over objection. That allows us to treat these inmates in the county jail and deal with whatever issues they're faced with. That's very important. It's important to the safety of the correctional deputies. It's important to the safety of the other inmates. And it's important to the mentally ill inmate that's getting the treatment. We don't need to be in a situation where we allow the mentally ill inmates to decompensate and get off their meds. And then we certainly can't use isolation and restraint ever again in the county jail. With the abilities of the chief medical officer and the ability to treat over objection, I think that we'll be able to go forward and have a safer environment in the county jail.
Mr. Parkinson.
Well, Mr. Clayton's answer is partially correct. The chief medical officer does have authority, but the reality is this. The authority has to come from the Board of Supervisors giving us authority to do it first. As a matter of fact, since I took over the medical mental health of the jail and the changes we've made, we will actually be going in front of the Board of Supervisors in the next couple few weeks to get that authority in order to to force Medicaid in those situations. That would require several things that were not in place, but mainly going to the court. The court has to make that decision, give us permission. It's not an arbitrary decision. At the time of Andrew's event, medical staff could use emergency medication, and we had that ability, or they had that ability. This is a step farther. I agree with Mr. Clayton on isolation. That's why I changed the days that somebody could be in that situation. I'm not an expert in mental health and mental health treatment. I had to rely on assistance for that. But I can tell you, I've become very knowledgeable in it just simply by reading and research.
Thank you. I think that I would like to invite the audience to thank these two gentlemen for being willing to serve us. So at this time, according to the prearranged coin toss, I'm going to invite Mr. Parkinson to offer his closing statement.
Well, I'd like to just start and say thank you again to Latino Outreach and to our group and the League of Women Voters for dedicating their time to this. It's been a long evening. Thank you for everybody that has stuck around, regardless of what side you are on this matter. I think it's a dedication of your night. I'm a positive thinking type of person. I like to look forward and look ahead as best I can. I would love to say that I could go back and undo something that was wrong. We all have had moments in our life where we've had those things that we want to go back and say we wish we could change. But unfortunately, that's not possible in this world. What's possible is affecting positive change. And I have been focused on this. It consumes nearly every day that I work on what we can do to change our system. And it's not just Greg. It's not myself. It's everybody in this community, because this is an epidemic. And it's affecting everybody here in this room right now. Whether or not you recognize it today or not, it is something that needs to change. And it's a big task to change, because on the state level, it is very, very much out of control. And that is trickling down to us on the local level. I agree with Greg's earlier assessment that we are completely lack the space we need. I can tell you my focus is making positive change. I mentioned, I think, at the beginning when I came into office, I had a number of promises that the Tribune said that they were going to hold me to. We accomplished those in a year. I'll continue to do what I think is necessary. I'll continue to do whatever changes are necessary. The group, the committee that I put together, the task force that I put together, are continuing to work with both the chief medical officer and our staff. And we added two physicians to that group as well, because I see the value. I see the value of having coexisting disorders treated together. I see the value in having one unified direction in what we're doing. And we have made that directional change. And I have a commitment from the county, all five board members that sit up here daily, that they're going to commit whatever it takes in order to make change in this system. And I would say this, I'm not finished. I can make this change, and I've proven that I was successful before, and I'll prove it again. And if there's doubters, then I would say wait and see, because we have moved for government at record speed. Thank you.
You may clap for him. And now, Mr. Clayton.
I echo the sheriff's remarks on thanking the Latino Outreach Council and to Jackie and for our panel here and for our League of Women's Voters. Thank you very much. And thank to all of you for coming out here tonight. This has been a long evening and a long day, and I know everyone's tired. It's important that we get together and have these type of vigorous discussions about the issues that are facing our community. I want to say that on behalf of Andrew Holland, that the video speaks for itself. His death was unnecessary. I think the sheriff would agree with that. His death at the hands of others is inexcusable. We're better than that. We have a very progressive community. We don't need to torture and kill our inmates, our vulnerable inmates that are in our county jail. The lack of an independent criminal investigation, the lack of accountability, and the lack of transparency is unacceptable on every level. Your elected sheriff must be held accountable. The badge he wears is a symbol of the public's trust. He's violated that trust by his failure to have the proper protocols and policies in place to avoid a death in the restraint chair. His denials and the blame game have served no one but himself. When he finally admits that he's responsible, it's an empty admission because there's no consequence. He vaguely blames other county departments for a death that occurred in his jail, a death of an inmate that was under his custody. The sheriff was responsible for the care and safety of Andrew Holland, and he failed that duty. We all await the results of the FBI's civil rights investigation of our sheriff's department. Those results may very well guide the future of the sheriff's department. Going forward, when elected sheriff, I pledge to all people of this county that I will work diligently to restore public confidence and trust in our sheriff's department and in our jail operation. I will be an advocate for all inmates and vow to maintain their care and safety in our county jail. Everyone in custody should be treated with respect and dignity. They will not be abused and punished while in custody. I will work to establish a psychiatric care unit within the county jail facility to provide care and treatment needed for all mentally ill inmates. I will strive to end this culture of indifference. We will treat all people with respect and dignity. We will treat victims of crime with concern and empathy. We will treat violators with fairness and dignity. Public cooperation, as I stated earlier, is paramount to achieving the goals of our department. We will enforce the laws in a fair and impartial manner. It's never the role of law enforcement to punish. I pledge, if elected sheriff, to be accessible, transparent, and fully accountable. I pledge to return common sense, humanity, and decency to the leadership of our sheriff's department. This is a pivotal moment for our sheriff's department. Join me in bringing reform, accountability, and transparency to your sheriff's department. I ask for your support, and I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes our Sheriff's Candidates Forum. Please remember to come back on April 25 for our very interesting judicial forum. I want to thank you again for your civic participation and thank the candidates. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Great job.
Thank you.
Greg, you did a great job.
Thank you.
And really well. Yeah.